great opportunity for us to get to know each other even better. I always love when you come to The Chat with Priscilla. We're going to sit down in our virtual living room and have a great conversation with a wonderful guest. You're going to want to stay tuned, okay? So grab your favorite drink, cappuccino, hot tea, coffee, you know, whatever it is you've got, and get comfortable. We're going to have a great time together. Great time together today because we are going to be talking to one of my favorite people on the planet. She is funny. She's warm. She's had influence on lots of people for lots of years. You are going to recognize her as soon as you see her. Please welcome Lisa Welchel.
Hello, my friend.
Hello.
Okay, I got to tell you right off the bat. That this woman is my friend. She
yes.
is my friend. She is just a delightful person. We have known each other for about 10 years
yes.
now. Mm-hmm. And throughout that time, I have watched you transition from many phases of life. And the reality is, though, people who have only seen you from afar have watched you transition through large portions of your life.
Yes, those who have known me longer than you.
That's
actually.
Exactly right. Because, you know, I wasn't even born yet when you were doing your time. That's not true. Everybody remembers The Facts of Life. Didn't you grow up watching The Facts of Life, okay? Wonderful program. And you played Blair. And you know, we might as well just start there, okay? I know most of your interviews probably start there. And I got to ask you, because Blair was this icon of demure, sophisticated. You know, she just kind of had it all together. And you played her so well. How is she different than Lisa Welchel?
Are you... Because I think you're inferring that there is something different. Because you don't think I'm demure and soft? And,
well, can we just say that you look amazing? Do you all agree with
that?
Me? She looks.
We can totally say that. Thank
amazing.
You. Okay, good.
I actually think you don't look that much different than you did in
you're
the 80s.
Sweet.
It's
Thank
true.
You.
You look wonderful. And I want to talk about that a little bit later on, how you have... You know, as women, our bodies change so much.
Yeah.
Hormones and all of that stuff just kind of changes throughout life. And yet, you've done a great job of just taking care of yourself. So I do want to talk about that.
Okay.
But I want
but
to know.
But yeah, no, I'm totally different from Blair.
You are?
Oh, yes. This is Blair's dress. I had to borrow this from Blair. Otherwise, I would be in my pajama pants and my Crocs and my T-shirt, which is kind of my go-to outfit.
Why didn't we do the show like, why didn't we do that? We should have worn T-shirts and...
We totally should have. I don't know. I mean, I've got it in the dressing room, which we will go change.
So you're much more comfortable just...
Oh, yeah. Yeah, like these shoes, they will be off in 5 seconds.
Yes.
As soon as I walk off here, halfway through, they're off.
Yeah. And tell us about that time frame in your life when you were on the set of Facts of Life. You were a Christian even then.
Yes.
What did that look like in Hollywood for you? How did you have to navigate loving the Lord and living for Him and yet being in this setting where I'm assuming that the majority of people that you were around, especially at the height of your fame, when you couldn't even go to the grocery store without, you know, everybody being around you. And how were you able to balance both of those things? Or were you able to do it well?
You know what? It wasn't an issue. I think because... I became a Christian before I went to California, and so it really wasn't like I went to Hollywood to kind of become famous. I really did know I was a child of God. Don't get much more famous than that. I didn't go looking for who I am. I knew who I was. I didn't go looking for something to fulfill me. I had, you know, something that filled me up. So there was not a lot of, there wasn't a lot of emptiness for me to go try to fill up. And so I didn't, you know, go down the paths looking for something. And I wasn't even that interested in it. And so it wasn't, I mean, I had my issues, but I would have had those issues staying in Texas. It really had nothing to do with Hollywood.
So you were born in Texas?
Yes.
Grew up most of your life in Texas?
Yes.
In your young years until you jetted off to
when
California.
When I was 12, moved to California to be on the new Mickey Mouse Club and then stayed out there until I had kids in junior high, moved back to Texas to raise them, and then just now moved back to California.
She didn't have her children when she was in junior high. She means when her kids were in junior high.
Yes, because otherwise I would have had something to talk about. How was I able to balance?
That's right.
Apparently not.
So you had your children. You got married, right? after the series ended. I mean, it was like that same year.
Yeah, we filmed the last episode of The Facts of Life in March of 88. I got married in July of 88, got pregnant in 89, then had a child in 90, 91, and 92. Yeah, so obviously Mrs. Garrett taught me the facts of life.
Okay, this is a huge life transition because you're going from this Hollywood, lots of attention your way, being on the set. You have spent 9 years. Was it 9 years y'all filmed that series? So you've got a whole life change very quickly because now you're a wife and you're a mom. Mm-hmm. And you're going to, later on in your children's life, you move to Texas. So you're out of the limelight completely. But when your children were young, that first decade, you made huge life change from Facts of Life to wife and mom. What did that look like for you?
Nothing was the same because I went from, you know, having somebody do my hair, my makeup and my clothes and the whole world, you know, kind of my little world revolved around me to almost immediately getting married and then having these three kids in diapers at one time. Mm-hmm. And I lost all the money that I made on the Facts of Life. I wasn't working. We were living on a pastor's salary in a rented house because we couldn't afford the down payment for to buy a house.
Okay, wait. Stop right there.
Okay.
We want to know how in the world all the money that you made from the Facts of Life got lost somewhere. We just need clarification on that.
I could make up something really glamorous and dramatic, but it really was just bad investments and, you know, people that kind of took advantage. And then, you know, I'm not a big spender, but I'm not good with money either. Mm-hmm. So all of it just, you know.
It just kind of flitted away.
A lot of it had to do with, you know, real estate went bad, the banking crisis, the oil crisis, all that, just all at one time. It was one of those perfect storms kind of thing.
And was it devastating to you, or were you kind of at the place in your life where it was okay because you were moving on to something different and you knew that you could regroup and rebuild?
Yeah, you know, I think I've just wired that way. I'm wired to, for one thing, I think it's one of the reasons why God tells us to remember the things he's done for us in the past. So when we're in the middle of it, we're not going to go, oh no, it's God going to show up. Mm-hmm. I mean, I have just so many stories from the time I was little of God coming through that no matter what happens, it's like, okay, you know what? He's going to come through. I don't know how, mm-hmm. but he's going to. And the lesson, the desert time, the wilderness time, I'm going to get, there are going to be treasures there in the darkness that I wouldn't be able to get if things were all going well. So, I mean, it just has been naturally easy for me because I do have such a real vital understanding of God's love for me mm-hmm. and who he is, that I just say, okay, what is here to learn here? And I'll learn what needs to be learned here and everything will turn out okay. And it always does.
Okay. I want to get back to your children and where you were in your life as a new mom in just a second, but I've got to ask you this question. We see so many young people in Hollywood that their life just turns out to be a disaster. There are several I can name right now that you're starting to see them kind of go off the deep end and you're going, oh man, I wish they had some people around them that would kind of harness them during this tender phase in their life. How did you escape the loopholes that a lot of the child stars that we know from the 80s didn't have the opportunity to escape? And so how did that happen? What do you account that to?
You know, I think two things. I think, commenting on some of the kids that are, you see them kind of going off the path right now, that is not abnormal for kids at that age. It's just that they are covered
by
the media.
Right.
And so then it's kind of amplified. But, you know, you look at any Christian household, half of the kids are going to go that way, half of the kids are going to go this way, and they're raised the same way by the same parents. And so if you're filming it, then this is going to get dramatized, and so it's going to look like, oh, they're going haywire. Well, follow them long enough, maybe into their 40s, and at 40, they're going to probably go through it and maybe not be in, you know, in the limelight. So I want to be careful of just saying, oh, they're going off the deep end, because I, having raised three kids, you know, there, I've got some kids that are trying to find their way on their own, and I have some kids that are doing the straight and narrow. And I just think there's room for all of that because God works in all of that. Mm-hmm. Now, for me, I think I was too scared to do that. You know, I think and also because I was on my own, I was clinging to God. And I think that's another thing. Sometimes, you know, parents get judged because their kids are experimenting. And that may be because they feel safe enough to. It mm-hmm. may be because they feel they are loved and they are accepted, and it's not based on their performance or whether they're good
and
or they're bad.
Did you think it was based on your performance, your acceptance by God, too?
I was very much the kind of, I understood my head grace, but I didn't really trust it. And so, yes, it kept me out of trouble, but it also, in a lot of ways, kept me from just resting in the gift of grace. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so it's just have to be careful with, you know, what you, again, I think we were talking about this backstage, what you call good and what you call bad. That's up to God to judge.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So you got through that phase in your life.
I got through that phase also because I really was, I learned at an early age just to have the time in the morning, just in the word and in prayer and filling
up with
the Spirit.
And you would do that on set?
I would do it before I got to the set.
You would?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so that was, so again, that also, there wasn't this emptiness. I didn't go looking in to fill that up with drugs or with alcohol or with boys. I filled mm-hmm. up with the Lord. And so I wasn't empty and searching. And mm-hmm. so that did keep me from going down paths that could have been destructive.
And you know, one thing that you told me a long time ago that I thought was very interesting was that, you know, you are just in the past 10 years of your life or so encountering real, meaningful girlfriend, deep relationship. You did not have that for the majority of your life. And was that because of the position you were in, that you just didn't have connection and intimacy in female relationships?
That was a part of it. But I think also I was really shy. And that's why I started acting, because my mom put me in an acting class to see if it would help me just kind of come out of myself, because I was too afraid to talk to anybody. Mm. And so I think I built this shell of protection around me, which also kept people out. And it wasn't until the last 10 years, as I began to experience grace and not just know it in my head, but when you know you're accepted, kind of like what I said earlier about kids, if they know they're accepted, then they can maybe make some mistakes and it's not so detrimental. Well, I was so afraid of making a mistake in my life that I kept really small. Mm-hmm. And so I think that I just felt more accepted and more what grace was like, so I didn't have to be so afraid and then let some of the barriers down and some of the self-protection down. And that's the only way that you can have real connection and intimacy anyway. And so it was all kind of, I was on television junior high and high school and didn't go to a normal school, so I didn't know how to have friendships anyway. And that played a big part of it as well. So it was all, you know, all working together.
Given everything you know now, looking back on it, if you could rewrite the story again, would you do it again? Have you ever felt overwhelmed? Or like your life was so stress-filled and stressful that you couldn't even enjoy your life anymore? What if I told you there was a little secret? There is something that the Jewish people have been doing for years and centuries. There's a discipline that is a regular part of their lives that has caused many of them to be able to steer clear of the stress-filled existence that many of us, you and me, often are accustomed to. I want to tell you about that secret.
We will always be drawn to overdo things, and God knows this. This is why He puts boundaries in place. They are a gift to us. We are now completely free, standing in the Shabbat space of God, the margin that God has given us so that we can experience the freedom that God has come to give all His children.
It's going to be a journey through the scriptures that is going to help us to enjoy life the way God always intended.
We're not just doing a Bible study together. We're on a missionary journey. We're on the road with Paul and Silas and Timothy. We're doing the gospel thing. That's what this is about. And we are entrusted to be the children of the day. Please, by all means, bypass me. Go for God. Ask Him. You pull these words off the page, Lord. You make it fire in my bones. You make me able to say when I get to the end of this journey, what if I had missed that? What if I had missed that? It is time to get back to the stuff of your calling. Today is the day.
Given everything you know now, looking back on it, if you could rewrite the story again, would you do it again?
Would I do what again?
Would you do your junior high and high school years the same? Would you exchange the normalcy, the friendships, the whatever you may have had mm-hmm. in a regular life in Texas, junior high and high school, mm-hmm. for the experience, the fame, the whatever good that came, mm-hmm. even good that came from mm-hmm. the life you had? Would you do it over again?
You know what? I can go one step further. There's nothing in my life that I would change, because
that's a big statement.
There's every single thing that, even if I were to think, well, yeah, if I had done this, then this would have been easier, or would have turned out better, or would have been less painful. What I got in that situation that maybe is a little bit more intangible and all related to my walk with the Lord was far and above worth it. So there's nothing that I would change, because every single thing has been absolutely perfect for who God has called me to be.
What would be one of those gifts? What would be the number one or number two gift that you got from that season of life that mm-hmm. you think the Lord gave you to prepare you for this next season?
Well, I would have to say one of the most public things on television, and one of the most painful things, was going through puberty on television. And there was so much focus on my weight. And I gained weight during puberty, and Blair was supposed to be svelte, and, you know, it was supposed to be all svelte and sexy and had great clothes. And I was outgrowing my Eastland Academy uniform. And, you know, they sent me to Fat Farms, and they put a scale in the middle of the rehearsal hall. I mean, it was really very, very difficult. And yet on the other side, so many things. One, I'm so glad that, I wouldn't have chosen this on my own, but I'm so glad that I was able to be a young teenage girl on television that looked normal, so that I wasn't more a part of the pollution of the mindset of young girls that saying you need to be skinny to be beautiful. Mm-hmm. Blair, I mean, how perfect. She was kind of fluffy at times, and yet she carried herself like she was just gorgeous. And would choose to give that message on my own, and that's the message I would want my daughters mm-hmm. to have on television. But it's not something I would have chosen. I wasn't that altruistic at that point.
Right. But but looking back, you see that it was actually a gift to the culture for them to see a beautiful, talented. Actually, you were the symbol of beauty, kind of
yes.
amongst the group of girls on that show. Mm-hmm. But you could have a little flesh on your bones, and it'd be okay.
Yeah. Exactly.
Well, I hope all those executives are looking at her now, because you look amazing.
Thank you.
And we want to know exactly why and how. But first, we got to get back to the kid part.
Okay.
So you just left Hollywood. You went home.
Yes.
Wife, mom, and you just kind of all of a sudden were out of the limelight.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We lost
Completely.
Sight of you.
Like yes. jumped into the deep end.
Did you enjoy that, or did you start to feel isolated and alone and kind of weird about it?
I loved it. I had a wonderful experience in show business, but nothing compared to just my joy of those years with those little kids at home. I mean, they were hard, and it was three kids in diapers and on very little money, and then eventually homeschooling the kids. So, I mean, there were some rugged years, but I was doing what I just had always, I'd always wanted to be a mommy.
What would you say to a mom
and
right
probably
now?
Probably the hardest emotional time of my life.
Why would you say that?
You know, just early marriage stuff and exhausted, and really some identity transition. You know, anytime you go through such a huge shift of life and identity, any kind of change like that, that's painful. I mean, mm-hmm. you got to break it up before mm-hmm. you kind of, and it's got to be a lot of times destroyed before it can be rebuilt, for what God has you in that season. And then about the time you start feeling good, some other season comes along.
Mm-hmm.
But at least by that time you can go, okay, I kind of know what's up here. I'm going to ride this and trust it, and it'll be good on the other side.
What did you do right in those 10 years when you were at home, homeschooling, kind of mommy-ness was your world? What did you do right? And what would you do differently if you could go back and do those years again?
Okay. I will be careful about saying what I did right. What I did right for me and for my family, because right. I do think that
everybody has exactly, what they need for their
family. Right. But my favorite thing that I did was every night from the time they were little, when they were little, 2 and 3, and I would put them to bed. We would just start with, what are your, we call it high low. What was your high of the day? What was your low of the day? As they got a little older, I called it window time because it was a time, it was the window to their soul. They were in bed. They wanted to stay up later. And so, even if it meant talking to mommy, they were staying up later. And I would just ask them questions, did anybody hurt your feelings today? Did you do anything you need to confess and bring out in the light? Is there anything that you don't understand? And I would have that time. And a lot of times they would save up something that would happen during the day because they knew at the end of the night they were going to have a chance to kind of get it off their chest. Mm-hmm. And I mean, it's like, the Catholic Church has something going on with the confession. There is something that feels good about that. And so,
Not to mention the rapport and relationship that grows between you and your child. And then when they're a teenager, they're used to having an opportunity to tell their mom or their dad, whatever the case may be, what's going on in their life.
And that'll be different with girls and boys. Like with my daughters, they still wanted to talk. Although one of the cutest things is my daughter once was little and she has said something she needed to confess. Of course, she had to put the blanket over her face because she was so embarrassed. And all it was that there was a boy in her third grade class that she said, and I blew him a kiss. I went... But then my son, when he got into junior high and high school, boys, they don't do this well.
Yeah, I need help. I've got 3 boys.
Yeah.
And Lisa told me this habit that she had of sitting on the edge of the bed and kind of talking to her kids. That's what I do. I kind of go into the room. I've done it for a long time now, remembering what you said, and in hopes of having teenagers later and young adults that want to, that know the door is open. Uh-huh. So I go in, and I'm waiting for this thing to happen you said is going to happen, where they open up their mouths and talk and bare their soul. But my boys just go,
Yeah, yeah.
It's
different with boys. So like when Tucker hit that age, then it was about really into music at that time. Mm-hmm. So I would just say he knew that every night I wanted him to play a song that he liked and then tell me what he liked about it.
Okay, so find something they like and talk about
and
it or
go
do
into
that.
Their world and to learn about them. And then he got a little older. We took golf lessons together. And so we're in the golf cart. We're not looking straight ahead, but I can be driving and he doesn't have to look at me, but you're 9 holes or, 18 holes. I never could do 18 holes. then there's going to be some conversation that happens. So also find something to do with them that's active in the course of the activity, they're going to just start talking. And then you just, capture that moment. Okay, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
It sounds so, it just sounds so perfect, Miss Lisa. It just seems like you just did it all so right. Please tell us a horror story from the raising of the children.
I will. Please. I will tell you. I have got the horror story.
We need one of those.
Okay. So I wrote a book called Creative Correction.
Yes, you did.
But
I know
the
story.
You know?
Okay. This is great. Okay.
And, it's because nothing was working, especially with Tucker, who has ADHD. None of the typical child-rearing methods were working, so I had to get creative and kind of find ways that beyond the top 3, timeouts, spanking, and yelling. Yelling, my favorite. But they weren't working, and so I got creative.
So you had to be creative, okay.
Yes. And that was great, and then... until the hormones started showing up, and then that was not working so much anymore, but it was like, but wait a minute, this worked before. So rather than ditch it and realize this is no longer working, I reinforced it and did it even more. And so, of course, on your first boy or first born, you make all your mistakes. Yeah. And I learned there's a totally different way of raising before hormones and after hormones. Mm-hmm. And things that worked here...
Are you talking about their hormones or ours?
That's a whole other thing. Exactly. Yes, that too.
Yeah.
You have to just throw it out and do something different.
Yeah.
I didn't know that, so I kept really making the boundaries smaller and smaller until it's like, But at one point, Tucker was much older. I mean, not much older, but he was, the hormones had been around for a while. And we were yelling because I was reverting and regressing to yelling. And he was on, at one point, I realized we're not going to settle this by yelling. So I said, Tucker, you know, just calm down. And when you calm down, we will have a conversation and work this out. And I, you know, slammed the door and guarded the back. And he's trying to beat the door down and get in the bedroom. And, you know, finally he goes away. And I'm thinking, okay, great, you know, we'll just handle this later. About 5 minutes later, my bedroom door opens up, and come flying in through the bedroom door, he's gotten a paperback copy of my book, Creative Correction, off the shelf and lit it on fire. Throws it into the bedroom and says, "That's what I think about your parenting." And, and you know what? That was a wake-up call for me.
Well, yeah.
But you know what? It was a wake-up call that...
Did he get a spanking after that? That's what I want to know.
No, he did not. I spanked myself after that because I was the one that was not treating him as a young man. Mm-hmm. I was still treating
him as a little
boy. You realize
that you needed to
do
it differently. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, young men, I mean, they need to be respected. And, you know, and I was not treating him with respect. I really wasn't. And I wasn't. And a lot of respect has to do with trusting them and trusting God that he is working in them. And I've learned my most important lessons by doing it the wrong way. Why would I not grant that to my children as well? And to realize they're going to learn their lessons, the lessons that are going to go deep, by making some mistakes and then going, oh, wow, that hurts. That's not going to work
letting
out.
Letting them make the mistakes
exactly.
sometimes.
And
yeah.
so I switched gears after that. And
after the book came flying into your room on fire.
First of all, I laughed. I did.
That is hysterical.
I did laugh. And I said, Tucker, you win. You so win on this one. Yeah. And then I really started just trying to ask him a little bit more questions, a few more questions to find out what he was really feeling, what he was going through, and that made quite a big difference.
Creative Correction. That is the name of one of Lisa's many titles, and you really need to get your hands on a copy of that book because it's
great.
But not
if your kids are over a certain age.
Because they will light it on fire and throw it into your room.
Right. Then you need to get the hardback so you can just knock them on the head.
It's a good book that really makes you think about creative ways to kind of align your children and to shape their hearts and all that great stuff. Okay, listen, this is just part one of our conversation with Lisa. We are going to have a part two because we still need to talk about your time on Survivor. See, a lot of folks from this kind of that are teenagers in their early 20s right now, they don't remember Blair.
Right.
They remember Lisa that they just saw on Survivor. We got to talk about that because Survivor's hard.
Yes.
It's hard work. You were hungry, weren't you?
I was hungry. I was itching. I was cold. I was stinky.
I still don't know why you did that. But anyway, we're going to talk about that and other life lessons she has learned. Would you please help me by thanking her for being with us today? Part two of a conversation we've already been having. So if you've not seen part one yet, then you need to make sure to go back and see part one because we are just now continuing a conversation that's already been going on with the most wonderful woman. She's a wonderful woman to me, and you're going to think so too after we continue this conversation. Would you please welcome Lisa Welchel? So we've already been doing a whole lot of talking about some of the formative years of your life, but we need to get kind of present day. We need to know where you are right now and what's been happening right now in your life. But to get us there, recently, I think just a couple of years ago, you were on a little television program called Survivor.
Yes.
We want to know how that even happened.
Well, it happened, first of all, momentary
insanity.
Yes. But also because I love the show. I've watched every episode of every season. I come from a family of game players. We play board games. I had a game club in my home when my kids were little. So I love to play games. And it seemed like the ultimate game.
Very extreme, Lisa.
Yes.
Monopoly, survivor.
Exactly.
Quite a leap.
And that was, I think that was one of the hardest things about it, is that I wasn't playing with a little shoe and a little, mm-hmm. you know, dog and a...
Play money.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I was playing with real people with that I actually liked and became friends with. And so that was the hardest thing for me. It wasn't even... Yes, the physical aspect was horrendous.
Okay, talk to us about the physical. What did you actually have to go through? We saw some of it, but it's cameras.
Oh, no.
We want to know what it...
There's no comparison to what really happens. You know, we... The first 17 days, it rained straight. So we were never dry and we were never warm. It was freezing. And we would sleep either in wet jeans or a bathing suit. And actually, the bathing suit was warmer than the wet jeans. And that was even freezing. And then to get warm, you got to snuggle up with everybody. But then nobody's taking a bath. So that's, you know, like, cold
or stinky. How many days did you go without taking a bath?
Oh, 39 days without taking a bath. Or, you know, washing my hair or... You know, there was no bathroom facilities, and, you know, we used leaves. So
would make you want to do that? What made you, when they called you and said, first of all, tell us how they called you.
Okay. Well, I actually, you know, made an audition tape because I wanted to be. I volunteered for this. I made an audition tape because I, you know, I wanted to play this game. And, you know, that kind of thing, I mean, I don't wash my hair.
People don't know how tough you really are. Like, this is a woman you need to know that decided that she wanted to, just in her walk with the Lord and growing spiritually, she decided she wanted to go on a silent, backpacking, no talking kind of fast trip somewhere. Tell us what you did. It was some journey you did kind of by yourself for your spiritual growth.
And then I decided, after this little kind of fast thing, well, I'm going to continue this fast. So I'm going to go on a 40-day fast. So, you know, I just continued it. So that kind of thing, going without food, you know, kind of depriving myself, that really wasn't the hard part. It was the emotional part that was the hard part.
See, folks don't know how tough you are. They kind of see this part, and they're thinking Blair, and they don't know that actually you're pretty rough and tumble, actually. You kind of like, you have the ability to... for your body to be in an extreme state that might cause other people to kind of falter and faint and back out.
Yeah.
And you're able to really endure a lot. What do you attribute that to? Why is that?
You know what? I don't think it's necessarily a good thing. I think that I have really kind of been, you know, we are body, soul, and spirit. You know, when God wanted us to know what his love looked like, he came in the body, in the flesh. So there is, he celebrates the body and humanity.
Mm-hmm.
But I think a lot of it even had to do with just kind of being raised from the time I was little in the church. I equated, when he says, you know, don't give place to the flesh, that, you know, the body. And so I have really disconnected from the body as if that's a bad thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so I haven't been in touch with my body. So I haven't listened to it. I haven't given it a voice. I haven't felt what it's feeling and paid attention to take care of it because I thought I was doing a good thing by kind of cutting off from it in order to be more spiritual.
Just kind of compartmentalizing your life. The spiritual part is more important. Forget the
physical part. And I have missed out on a lot of the beauty of our humanity.
Mm-hmm. Yes, one of those things we talked about in part one was just connecting with other people, being open and vulnerable and sharing your life with them. Some of that was cut off from you because of the, you know, your ability to kind of distance yourself and keep yourself separated.
Right, because not only because the body, because we are interconnected, that also had a lot to do with the emotions.
Mm-hmm.
And because if our body and emotions and mind and will, I lived most of my life in my mind and my will. Figure out what is the right thing to do, how to do it, engage my will, and just do it. And I call that godliness. I call that, I'm walking by faith. Faith is not a feeling. I am walking, you know, I'm obeying, and I'm not paying attention to, you know, I'm not giving place to the flesh.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it did keep me out of a lot of trouble. You know, it did.
Yeah.
But it also kept me from the fullness of experiencing
grace
and experiencing connection in with other people, and that's a whole big part of God. He is very relational.
Yes, yes.
And he gave us our emotions that are a beautiful thing, and I was missing out on a lot of the beauty that was available to me because I was afraid of it. Mm-hmm. I was afraid of my heart. I was afraid of my flesh. I was afraid I was going to make a mistake and mess up, and so not really taking God at his word that grace covers all that, and it's mm-hmm. really not about me. So even though it looked like I was doing it for God to be a really good Christian, I was actually just a really good Pharisee mm-hmm. in a lot of ways.
Very legalistic. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah.
Okay, so you go on Survivor. You do not take a bath for 39 days. You are rained on for 17 days. You're in freezing temperatures in a bathing suit trying to get warm with all of these other people. You're eating rice, uncooked
rice.
Yes. For how long?
We didn't have fire for the first 10 days, and so we just ate rice out of the bag because we couldn't cook it. Yeah. You know, and it really didn't, it wasn't nutritious. Nourishing.
Well, I suspect not.
But it was nice to just chew on.
I personally like a little gravy on my rice, actually.
Yeah.
Okay, and so what was the hardest part? What was the hardest part of Survivor for you, and would you ever do it again?
Okay, see, that was, of all the things that I would think twice about doing and not regret, that, you know, that would, Survivor, it took me a while to say, okay, I would do that again. But yes, I would do it again. Because it changed me.
Really? How did it change you?
Well, a lot of it had to do with what I was just talking about, and that I had so spent my life wanting to be good because I equated good with godliness. I mm-hmm. equated good with being a good testimony, with being a good Christian. I took very seriously my platform that God had given me, and I wanted to use it to draw people to him. Mm-hmm. And so if I'm going to be like Jesus, then I need to act like Jesus. But you know what? We're not to act like Jesus. Mm-hmm. We're to be like Jesus. Mm-hmm. And I was acting like Jesus.
There
is a big difference. Mm-hmm. And we can only be like Jesus when we connect the humanity and the divinity. Mm-hmm. And so I realized, because on Survivor, it takes everything away from you, and you are exposed for whatever is in there.
And that left you in a very emotional state. You were
very
emotional on the show.
And it also left me very raw, and I could not help but see, as much as I had tried to disconnect from it, there was a very selfish part of me that wanted to knock you out so I could get ahead.
Mm-hmm.
There was a part of me that wanted to put $1 million above relationship. There was a part
of me that wanted to. That's the game. You knew that going in. That's the
whole point, right?
But
I couldn't divorce myself from my life. And because I knew it was a game, but then I also knew that people...
These are real people.
Well, and people watching on television, I had, said, I'm a Christian. And then if I acted like, lying and betraying and backstabbing, I know it's a game, but I was afraid that was going to put a blight on, I was just going to be one more of those Christians that when it came down to it, I was going to, just forget
that. And the thing is, we watched you struggle with that on that show. You were sitting in a corner, balled up in a fetal position.
I know it.
Trying
yeah.
to figure out what to do. Do I play the game? And do you really think that it really does boil down to that in a situation where it is a game, that is why everyone is here, that your Christianity is best seen when you choose, even in the instance where it's all a game and we all know it, not to betray or lie or play the game? Do you feel like your faith needed to be expressed where you choose, even though we're all here for the game, I'm mm-hmm. not going to play the game because I want to make sure that no one maligns the name of Jesus because I lied or betrayed?
Yeah. For me, it was important to accept all parts of myself, that part that was very human and wasn't very Christ-like, and that to be able to say, yes, both sides are me, and it's the wholeness that is accepted by God, mm-hmm. not just the good. It's not, because that is, that is legalism, and that is, that's works. And so for me, I think I needed to be able to just go out there and play the game and know in my head this is just a game and just leave that up to the audience to choose what they wanted to believe and not care so much. That was the journey I needed to be on. But I don't know that it's the journey that everybody, you mm-hmm. know, in that situation would need to be on. But for me, I remember when God was really going to, I realized he was trying to teach me about grace. And this was about 8 years ago. And I remember saying to him, oh, I really do want to learn about grace. I just don't want to need grace. Because if I need grace, that means I've messed up. And I still equated messing up with separation from God, with him, with just not pleasing him. Mm-hmm. And I needed to mess up. And I think it's one of the reasons why I got into a situation where there was permission to do all these things that all of us have inside of us.
And in the end, what did you choose?
Have you ever felt overwhelmed or like your life was so stress-filled and stressful that you couldn't even enjoy your life anymore? What if I told you there was a little secret? There is something that the Jewish people have been doing for years and centuries. There's a discipline that is a regular part of their lives that has caused many of them to be able to steer clear of the stress-filled existence that many of us are accustomed to.
We will always be drawn to overdo things, and God knows this. This is why he puts boundaries in place.
It's going to be a journey through the scriptures that is going to help us to enjoy life the way God always intended.
In the end, at the very end, like in the last few days, I chose to play the game and to play it hard and to, you know, to just say, really? And then it was a whole nother lesson once it aired and got a lot of bad feedback, you know, because the Christians were saying you are not being a good witness. And then the people that aren't Christians are saying, well, you know, you need to get your big girl panties on and play the game or get off the island.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So there was no pleasing. And then just to realize, you know what? You are so right. Both of you are right.
And isn't that a lesson in and of itself? That no matter what you do, whether you don't have to be on Survivor for that to be a lesson, right? No matter what you do, there's going to be somebody over here that thinks you should have done it differently, somebody over here that should have done it differently. And so ultimately, it is, okay, Lord, what do you want me to do in this particular scenario? And I do it to honor you. At the exclusion of what everybody else is going to think.
Yes. And then also, I think it's not just either or. It's like I could say to both camps, yeah, that is so true. Oh, yeah, you're right, too. Mm-hmm. You know, it's okay. And of God, I'm going to try to do my best. But if I mess up, that's okay, too. The mm-hmm. grace covers that. So not working so hard to please others or even to please God. I don't have to work hard to please God. I am pleasing to God. Mm. And in that resting place, I'm actually going to probably please him more because I'm actually taking his gift seriously.
Yeah.
Not just kind of half, okay, you do that part, but just fill up what I can't do.
Right. Okay. When you got home, when you were booted off the show, mm-hmm. were you sad that you were booted off? Because you were in the top three. She made it down to the last three. Mm-hmm. Were you sad that you were booted off, or were you grateful to the Lord that you were going home to your soft bed?
Well, except when you make it to the final three,
you all go
39 days. It doesn't matter. So there's no more days than that. The final three, 39 days. So would I have liked to have gone 39 days with $1 million? Yeah. Yeah, I was sad I didn't win.
Yes, okay. But when you got home, what did you do? What was the first thing you did when you got back to your life?
My daughter met me.
I heard somebody in the audience say, did she take a bath?
I did that the night I was, you know, the final tribal council. When I got home, my kids met me at the airport, and I had a large Route 44 Sonic cherry lemonade.
Amen.
Hallelujah.
And I'm very intrigued by the fact that you say you would do that again if the people from Survivor are watching.
No. I would do that again.
You wouldn't.
I would have that experience again. I would not
do
it again.
Oh, you wouldn't do it a second time.
No, there is a whole nother thing.
Thank you. I misunderstood you, and I'm so glad I did, girl.
No, I would do it over again. But I would not,
that experience,
but I would not do the show again. No.
So never mind.
Yeah.
Scratch that. Do not call Lisa Welchel. She does not want to do that again.
That's
my
right.
friend likes to eat too much for that.
That's true.
Okay. What does your life look like now? You are? How old?
I'm 51.
You're a good-looking 51.
Thank you.
You're a good-looking 51. So we need to know what you're doing now, how your life looks different. What have you been surprised by in this season of your life that you when you looked forward to 50, 51, 50 years old, you didn't know your life would look like this or entail this?
I did not expect to be divorced.
Okay.
I did not expect to be needing to figure out how am I going to provide secure future for myself. How am I going to have retirement? How am I going to be able to, I would really like to be a full-time grandmother when kids, grandkids come along, but am I going to, you know, going to just, am I going to be working until the very end? I mean, there was all those things. There's no way I would, would I be living in an apartment, you know, sharing a room with one of my kids? You know, I mean, all that. There's, would I be wondering, what am I going to do with my life and starting over in every area? I certainly did not picture that for myself at this time.
The divorce, hard on your family, hard on your kids are grown now. So how did that affect them, and how are you guys doing through all of that, your family?
Divorce is going to be hard on the whole family. As far as, you know, on a continuum, I think it's about as good as it can get. My kids were grown. We are all, the whole family's very close. I mean, my ex-husband still travels with me and is my road manager, and we speak, you know, when I'm speaking at churches, he's the one that's fronting the gig and setting up the book table and selling stuff and traveling with me. So, you know, that's not
friends.
The scenario of most, you know, divorce situations. And, you know, when we spend all the holidays together, he comes to California, we go out to dinner and a movie. So that is not the typical scenario. And so therefore, you know, it is filled with much, much more grace than I think it's, or it doesn't, well, I think you need grace no matter what.
Yes, but it could be a lot more difficult than it's ended up being.
Mm-hmm.
And you've recently moved from Texas. Mm-hmm. You were back in California, the land where you were for so many years.
Because I had to figure out, what do I want to be when I grow up?
Yeah.
Because my kids, you know, I got a divorce about the same time. My last one was going off to college. And it's like, oh, wow, I need to actually make a living and plan something. And what can I do? Well, I was an actress about 25 years ago. Let me try that again.
So you thought you were going to try that again.
Yeah, because I love it.
You do love it. Mm-hmm. So when you pulled away from it, did it feel like something was missing to not be acting? Or during that season, did God give you the grace to walk away from it and go, I don't even want to act anymore?
I didn't expect that I would ever go back to acting. I really didn't. I left. It was great. It wasn't like I was rejecting it, but I loved being, I would love to just be, I mean, I would love to just, you know, write books and speak and be a grandmother. I enjoy acting, but I'm pursuing it because I would love to be able to make money at something I enjoy doing. Mm-hmm. And the jury's out on that. That's going to happen. You know, you can't just decide, I want to be an actress and go do it. There's, you know, a lot of many more talented acting actresses out there that aren't working, and they're all in my acting class, and it's just, you know, that's a whole nother level of insecure.
So you are in an acting class.
Yes.
I think people would find that very interesting because you've spent such a large chunk of your life acting.
And I'm the worst one in my acting class.
No, I'm sure you're not.
Okay, no, I am, and I tell you why.
Did the teacher tell you that you're the worst one?
Well, he gives me many more notes than the other ones. So, and a lot of it has to do, again, back to that disconnect thing. I love comedy because comedy, you can kind of stay above things, laugh a lot, which is kind of what I do in life. But drama, you have to be in touch with your emotions, and you've got to give them place, and you've got to feel them and let them express through the text. And that's what my acting class is about. And I have spent so long disconnecting from emotions because they're scary and I'm afraid of them, and they'll be overwhelming, or I might do something wrong or unchristian like or embarrass myself. And so in the context of an acting class, there's permission to blow up and be angry, which I would not give myself permission to do in life, or, you know, permission to be kind of sexy, you know, in a scene. And, you know, it's okay, it's in a scene, but I wouldn't do it in real life. But hey, you know what? I'd like to be able to feel sexy. That is kind of part of...
Speaking of sexy.
Yes. Okay.
You're looking mighty sexy.
Thank you.
We need to talk about 51 and sexy.
Okay.
How are you keeping your body in such great shape. Our, you know, our bodies change so much. Yeah. I'm getting ready to turn 40. We were talking about this earlier. And I have just noticed stuff all of a sudden. The same exercises, the same foods, the same regimen. It just is not maintaining the same way. And it's not just weight, hair, everything. It's just your hormones seem to change everything around and you've got to readjust. Mm-hmm. What have you found to be readjustments you've had to make in this new decade of your life? Mm-hmm. What are you doing? Because you look great. You look healthy. You look well. What have you found is working for you?
I'm really not a good person to ask because I really am up and down and I don't have a real good discipline routine. I try to eat healthy, but I also eat anything I want, just small portions or...
See, but that's a decision you've made that's actually huge for a lot of people because... I think some folks think that a diet means you have to be so restrictive that you're not eating the things you love.
Yeah, no, but that really, doesn't work for me.
No, that don't work for me either.
I need
some fried chicken.
Oh,
I just do. Yeah, mm-hmm. And you can eat it, but you eat it in moderation.
Yeah,
so that's a good. Because
I'm still,
hint.
You know, I don't feel like I'm the person to ask because that's not as much as I've struggled with my weight. I've never been able to make an addiction out of it. I know that sounds like there's parts of me when I wanted to lose weight, I was like, okay, yeah, I'd like to have an exercise addiction, you know,
yeah.
Or I'd like to be able to, you know, because that's just never been,
but
I mean,
Lisa,
I got my
you're
other
not
issues.
Giving yourself enough credit. You're balanced. That's what you're saying is you
that's
haven't
right.
made an addiction
that's
out of
right.
exercise or out of not eating this, not eating that. You have just decided I'm going to enjoy food. I'm going to enjoy exercise. But you've also done it in a way where you can stay balanced and healthy.
And every once in a while, I'll hop on the treadmill, you know, and try to do that at least 3 times a month. You know.
So we will not take your advice with exercise.
No.
So has your body changed much from 40s to 50s? Have you seen anything different, really? Or are you still feeling kind of the same? Or
I mean, it's changed. Yes, it's always changed. But see, I have been so body-focused since I was 12.
Mm-hmm.
So I haven't, you know, I mean, I have gone through so many different... My body has changed so many times that I don't know what looks normal. I don't
mm-hmm.
know what is normal. I'm always like 10 pounds up or down.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Well, are you up right now or down?
I'm about 7 pounds up.
Well, it is in the right place.
So we can go have some fried chicken because I got another 3 to go here.
We might as well take care of that,
exactly.
Right? Okay, what would you go back and tell your 20-year-old self? If you could look back and say, girl, let me tell you this. You don't need to worry about this, or you do need to be more concerned about this.
Just sock your money away and don't invest it. Because investment's not always a good thing.
Yeah.
I would say really celebrate. This is kind of a bold statement. Celebrate the dark as much as the light, because that's what's integrity, is wholeness, and you can't have the light without experiencing the darkness, and there are treasures in the darkness.
Do you mean the ups and the downs by light and dark? What do you mean by dark?
I would say, in general, the
okay.
light and the dark. Probably not the way we often interpret it for, like, evil or
right.
good.
Right,
as much as the shadows and the hard things and... what we would call even negative emotions.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there
mm-hmm.
is a place for, you know, anger. There is a place for fear even. I know he said, do not be afraid. But at the same time, we don't know what it means to really trust God. For me, I didn't feel a lot of those things. So, it was great. I can say, I trust God. But when
but
I
you don't know you do until you're in a position where you feel what it's like
exactly.
to trust him.
Exactly. Yeah, mm-hmm. exactly.
I get
and
that.
So I would just say, you know, just celebrate the wholeness of life because you don't have to be so afraid of don't have to be so afraid that acceptance and grace is not going to cover everything, and there's so much to learn in humanity and not just the divine nature.
So it sounds to me like you would tell your younger self to go on the adventure, experience all of it. Don't push some of it to the side because you think it's bad or wrong or you're not going to gain acceptance from God or whoever because of this. Just go ahead and group all of that together. Don't compartmentalize and just enjoy fully everything, mountains, valleys, light, dark.
Yes, and be, it. You know, the original, be naked and unashamed. Mm. And naked means you're not covering up the lumpy, bumpy stuff, mm-hmm. Because you don't have to, because you know the gaze and the delight of God doesn't change by your performance or how you look, because he sees, you know, he sees his little girl, and his little girl is utterly delightful to him.
I'm so glad that your 50-year-old self has discovered that.
Yeah.
Because you are a beautiful, wonderful woman, and it's so neat to see how your whole life has come together in a way that you've got just this bright smile on your face and this radiance about you, and it's good to see you like this.
Thank
it's
you.
Great to see you. I'm glad that your life is so full and wonderful. Your kids are healthy. You're healthy. It's a good season in your life.
It is.
It's a great season. Would you please thank her for being on our